Who's in?
Count Peter, Steve, Joel Bender, Chip Masters, Kupishado, and Howard Mason. I don't know. Am I missing anybody?
Someone just joined.
I'm David. David Lee. David Lee.
Hey. Join.
Did we hear Pat Hayes too?
Yeah, I saw myself. Oh, sorry.
Okay. So who else are we expecting? Rob Raskin?
Rob Raskin.
We might as well start. And I jot down a few points on things that we might want to review. And it's a long list. I'm sure we're not going to cover all of them, but we probably want to touch on each and then at least make a disposition as to what to do with each next, and most of them are actually probably would end up as assigning someone to champion something and then continue the discussion over the mailing list so that we have a transparent process going into this. Would that be okay with everyone? Oh, by the way, I also promise that I am recording this call for the sake of people who won't be able to join us. So please be aware that the call is recorded and probably will be posted on the wiki as well. So unless we later decide not to. So I'll just go down the list, and Ed and I had a short conversation, and of course this call is mainly aiming at the process that needs to happen between now and October 30th, the end of the month, when we meet face to face. And of course an aggressive approach is to at least hope that we have some deliverables ready by the time we meet face-to-face so that we can turn on those effectively, with most people there face-to-face and some maybe joining us synchronously remotely. So we could actually look at it from, take the perspective from the deliverables and work backwards. And presumably, we have sort of five deliverables, or at least four deliverables, and someone to sort of track the deliverables listed out here. Someone to draft the natural language piece, someone to work on a normative or reference, which we will later decide, the Cliff ontology, someone to draft the OWL ontology, someone to draft the UML model, and then a person to track and get everyone coordinated. Before we go into sort of identifying the champion and or editor, is there anything else that should go onto this list?
Well, I just have a question of who the target audience is for editors. Writing styles and deliverable styles can change a lot depending on who we expect the target audience to be.
Shall we say eventually it should be an ISO standard that gets adopted? Would that be a sort of the?
But that doesn't quite answer Joel's question. I mean, I've seen ISO standards written at several, I would say, different styles. I mean, I think Peter, you and I probably have a particular style in mind, but I understand the problem because I've run into this elsewhere. That there is this issue of the question is whether it's going to be a tutorial or a standard. And the problem is it sort of has to be both to get used, right? That's
my experience also. Yeah, it has to be a little bit of both.
Could it be two documents? You know, one each serving a specific role, reference that sort of thing, or the main growth, value, whatever.
Okay, I'm
stage yet at all where we can write.
Shall we defer that question? We'll find out later. Let's.
I think I'll consider my question answered if the point is, if the answer is just ISO or OASIS or something. That's fine.
Right. If we do,
we can defer the details of the
brief. Yes. Let's defer. But
ISO is close enough.
All right. Yeah. I'm kept.
There is one key question that we need to address, though, because if you're looking at an ISO audience, the bulk of the content that you're talking about is already standardized. You're just talking about an alternate representation.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, to some extent, we might be looking at a guideline of how we apply ontological principles to the existing standard, because we really don't want two standards for units of measure, or an additional one standard for units of measure.
Yep. So, I'm capturing into the notes. So, on in terms of style and audience, aim the deliverable as an ISO standard, but we need a draft standard with enough supporting tutorial material. Would that be okay? And then Howard makes a note that most of the material is already the standards material is already available.
Well, certainly we need to say how we are aligned with ISO TR99, the VIM, okay?
Uh-huh.
And anything else in that vein. I mean, clearly there's some relationship to ISO 1000 and so on. But so we need to say that, how we're aligned with that. But the fact is that I suspect that this is not going to be just an ontological rendering of the VIM. More accurately, I think, based on some discussions we've already had, that there will be some clarifications and or, we should call them, knowledge engineering departures that are made necessary by just so that we get something that can be used to do what its purpose is. And the real question is to make sure that we understand what our purpose is. This is a separate issue, really, from what the audience is. It's, Howard's right. The extent of what we are doing is rendering the VIM into a formal language. That's fine. But clearly there will be some departures there, and we need to be clear. We need to be very clear about how we are related to the VIM, rather than just saying what Howard described, that this is a formalization of it.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it will be. Among other things, we need to think about how it relates to the UCUM as well.
Okay, if people could... if people could refresh their wiki page, I assume everyone is looking at the piece where we're sort of putting in notes for this. So if you refresh, I have got rough statements, but look at those as just placeholders to remind us that we've talked about this. I will have plenty of opportunity after the session to clean up, but if we don't agree in principle, let's bring it up. Otherwise, let's go back and try to appoint the champion / editor. Otherwise, we'll be here all day. Someone actually had something to say, whom I interrupted. If that person could.
It was me, you except for Peter, but that's okay. I answer your procedural point. Let's go back.
Oh, okay. So I think the names almost pop up. I mean, on the list, but we definitely need sort of to confirm this over the call and at least have the person agree to take up that responsibility. I guess for the natural language draft standard, I believe Ed Bachmeier had previously agreed that he will do that. That be true? Would that be you, or would you have a co-champion?
My job is to write the draft text for the definitions of the symbols.
Yes. So...
I'm trying to figure out... okay. I don't mind being, being the
champ.
First editor or whatever that should be for that.
Right. And then feel free, I mean, after any person is identified as the champ, to bring in your co-champion or whatever and sub-team as necessary. So on next item on the on cliff, I guess that would be Pat. Pat Hayes.
Yeah, I'll volunteer for that.
Okay.
I'll even volunteer to keep my ideas about the poetry separate from the group that we're going to
Alright, okay, we'll leave that on the recording. It's too complicated to capture it into the notes. So, on to Al.
In this quarter, could I have a, question?
Yes.
About the process of making multiple renditions of this content. Isn't there a need to first agree on the... I hurt anybody by saying design, but if you first agree on how design is, it's one language and then maybe translate it into others.
That's probably going to end up like that, but may I suggest we defer that discussion, because that is a much longer discussion than what we're trying to do, is just identifying a few names.
But I agree, by the way.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yes. I mean, we can't go out. And besides, I mean, we also have four question marks as to what the aim is. Eventually, what is normative? That is one thing we need to discuss after identifying the names.
We're still trying to find an owl chair.
Right. Owl. I mean, originally, we had at least... plan to have Chip and Rob, who has both worked on an OWL rendition, and Gunter, who has his work turned into an OWL rendition already.
I don't know that. I would not be a good champion for OWL now.
Okay.
Somebody else did the conversion.
Luis Bermudez had done. Yes, so someone had made a post and advised at least the mailing list that Luis Bermudez had actually made a conversion of UCOM into OWL.
We actually have. I mean, he gave us a point of the document. I downloaded it sometime ago.
Although I'm not sure how authoritative that can be taken. I haven't really reviewed that in detail, so there might be misunderstanding there. But anyway,
okay.
Yes.
So then we are left with, I mean, if Gunter sort of conceives, then we're left with Chip and Rob. And is Rob on the call yet? Raskin? Oops, unfortunate. So we've got Chip and Rob. If we understand it correctly, Chip, I mean, despite the fact that both projects came out of NASA, you and Rob actually did not sort of do things together.
Right. Question Chip is, do you have tomorrow? It depends on the deliverable and the time frame. Between now and October 30th, I'm going to be pretty tight. But you know, going forward, I believe I would have time to edit the OWL ontology and to be the champion for that. I mean, certainly if I was good for someone, if there was a co-champion.
Can I ask you what your personal OWL were talking about?
Oh, right.
Shall we leave that to the champion to recommend? So let's say which version of we'll leave it to the champion to recommend.
Well, or put that one out as a discussion item for that guy.
Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. So can we say at least for this meeting that we nominate Chip and Rob to be co-champions, especially when Ed Bachmeyer mentioned something like called QUDV, which none of us know much about, unless Chip, you do. It's not QUDT, QUDV that came out of JPL, and I had a suspicion that it could be fairly closely related to Rob Raskin's work, but we don't know for sure. Are you familiar, Chip?
Honestly, no, I'm not.
Okay.
Rob might be.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the name I know. I'm moving on, Peter. That's the resources to be looked at along the way. QUDV, as far as I know, wasn't. I mean, the version of that I saw was with a UML, a set of UML diagrams, definitions, and symbols that were used in the UML diagram. So, as far as I know, there wasn't. If it's related to Raskin's ontology, it might well be the same thing in the UML version of Raskin's ontology. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So, is that okay with you, Chip, and of course to co-champ this piece with Rob?
Yes.
So, all right. Then UML model. I guess David will be our champ if David Leo. That's okay with you.
I'm happy to do this. I mean, to a certain extent, I'm probably still happier doing not working on the owls, but I am happy to listen to the owl.
Fantastic.
But all these things are going to go forward together anyway, so it's hard to get the patient time, but I'm happy to do the owl.
Great. Sounds great. And then on the managing and tracking the project progress, I guess I would nominate the Joe Bender and myself, if that is okay with and if anyone else wants to take this on too, we definitely need more hands.
I'd be happy to.
Anyone else? So it would be Joe Bender and Peter Yim. Right, so maybe one quick run through. We are probably not going to resolve this, but at least identify how we're going to move forward. So what is going to be normative and what is reference?
That now?
No, I mean, is there a quick thing that could sort of render a general consensus for now? If not, then we'll leave it as an open item for further discussion.
Well, you have indicated the English text should be normative, and the rest could be either.
No, I didn't indicate anything. I indicated a few possibilities and then a question mark. The fact that English language, the natural language is normative, is just consistent with prevailing standards processes.
Yes.
Well, the standard normative elements will be the scope definition and any terms, definitions, and abbreviations. Because we are referencing other normative material, that should be referenced, and we should only make normative any other elements that we add to it in order to avoid conflict.
Right.
Yes.
Well, there is something to be said in the case of the formalized version, since it's implicit formal. The actual formal shape of that particular formalization form, which means that if you're going to use common logic today, then this is easily accessible. So that's sort of things for operation, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. But those are over and above that which is already agreed in ISO IEC 80000.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
But the point, I think, is the past point is well taken, that we intend that the formal representation, at least the cliff and the owl, will in fact be normative in the sense that this is the reference ontology.
Right, exactly.
Right. So shall we document this so that we don't have to go through the point again? We intend that Cliff and all renderings will be normative. And the UML will be referenced.
The UML is a depiction. I think that's the intent. The UML, the function of the UML really is to be part of that tutorial, to present, to make this more comestible to the people. Because it really is hard for people to read and drop a cliff, depending on what version of OWL we actually use to express it. But that may be more or less difficult to read.
So UML models will be for the tutorial.
Right. They'll show up in the text. The new UML models. One can consider the UML models to be normative in some sense if you cared. It's a question of whether, ultimately, the only question, a normative UML model only means that some one of the standard forms of exchange for the UML model then becomes a normative reference. But it doesn't seem to me that that's a critical issue here. I really don't care whether the XMI version of the model is ever used by anybody.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a depiction. I agree with that. It is helpful pictures to visualize. I would like that there's only one formal representation, formal notation, and I'm having trouble actually just recalling how the cliff representation looks. Is that one of a lisp-like notation?
It's a lisp-like notation, I guess, right?
I would strongly prefer that one over OWL if I had the chance to vote. Wow. Because I can actually read it with OWL. It is either too much noise in all this RDF junk, or it's a very hard, funny other notation that I can't figure out. But this,
well, I swear, there is the magic. XML now is actually much more readable.
Okay.
Much more like a logic. But I agree, it's still not a delicate list. By the way, I was planning to, OWL being semantically accurately transliterated, even to some of logic, I was planning to keep wherever it was natural and sort of, well, wherever it was natural to keep using the OWL namespace in the rendering. So for things like that. Just to sort of, facilitate
okay,
the cliff itself effectively doesn't. If you use OWL, if you're going to use OWL properties, for example, then they are relations that need names and cliffs. So, right, that's what you're suggesting.
I'll just use the same name,
Kind
of obvious what's being done.
Right. And appeal to the OWL namespace for the definitions of those symbols.
Yeah. No, I can write to the definition. The definition will already exist already, so it's necessary. It's not wrong to do really expensive tasks.
So could someone...
You think OWL names for something that is not going to be based on OWL modeling?
Well, it is. There's a semantically accurate embedding of OWL into the system once recognized OWL in OWL and other things. As the form of the text changes drastically from the RDF version, of course, but it's very close. It basically becomes OWL expressions become a whole lot of as a result, it's very similar to the magic text for OWL.
So there are a couple of points. One is I can recognize most of the voices, but I don't expect everyone to be able to recognize everyone else. So when someone speaks, could you state who you are first? Can someone sort of restate sort of the key disposition for the notes? So I have under here, we will use the same namespace for both Cliff and OWL. And then I also have...
In the Cliff, we will use the OWL namespaces for OWL-based constructs.
Okay, in the Cliff... if people would refresh this screen, this last sentence is captured under purple number 220K, 220K. So those who are unfamiliar with using purple numbers in real time, if you use a browser that can search screen, then when I say 220K, if you sort of search for 220K, you'll land on the exact statement where we were talking about this.
I think this is actually pretty fine detail, which takes space. I'm not even sure. I certainly can't quite follow the significance of that.
Right. Okay. Back to the.
To be simple, to be clear, maybe it's just one of those things where you have to have been there. But what Pat is saying, Gunther, is only that by using the owl in the cliff in the Lisp-like language, the verbs, or at least those verbs that match owl verbs, owl language level verbs, will show up in the cliff at exactly the owl verbs.
Okay.
If you think about this as a Lisp thing, in which what you have is verb, you know, operand,
right,
sort of thing, all right, then what you're going to have here is owl colon subclass X, Y, says X is a subclass of Y.
Oh, could be a void in the owl colon stuff. I don't know.
You can take off the owl colon, like, but it's optional.
Yeah, okay.
But that was the intent. Okay. So the word subclass means the same thing in both languages.
Sure.
Yeah, and of course there's definitely a very meaningful suggestion that we use only one of the formalization as normative. Do we still want to discuss that, or do we want to close the discussion and say this is it, so that we can move on?
So if there's a transform between the two, and I suppose that there is, it really doesn't matter that much. I'm more thinking about the efficiency of the discussion. If we have one rendition that we discuss on, it's going to be more effective than if we have two, because they might be out of sync during the time that we discuss and change it.
Well, that's true. But on the other hand, Pat, your point about expressiveness is relevant. There will be things that we can't capture formally in Cliff that probably can't be captured formally in Owl.
Then it's use Cliff.
Right. Yeah.
And when you worry about the backwards compatibility to Owl after we're done with the agreement on Cliff.
Okay, I mean, I think it would be a good idea to keep the Owl in mind as we go. It probably wouldn't be good to go off on complicated risks and only be expressed in ways that will never be found. If such a phenomenon were to, if a thing were to crop up, that would be a good argument for blocking that line.
I know, it's clear.
But we could do that. I think we're good enough experience to that.
Okay, what's the disposition again? Yes. Can someone help me with sort of capturing something into the notes? Pat, maybe?
Do I type into this thing?
Note.
Right.
Okay,
I'm confused. Are we talking about being normative as we're with a small n within our group, i.e. being the primary point of discussion together as a peer, or are we talking about it in the final document?
No, we were talking about the final document, the deliverables, because we are now sort of moving towards drafting the deliverables. This is sort of one key piece that needs to get out of the way before people can start drafting.
Either way,
yes.
I'm not so sure. I mean, Gunther's point is that when we're working, we need to work with a reference and or Pat described it and think about the others.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we get down to the normative part, I suspect that we intend both of these to be normative, hoping that one is a derivative of the other.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think publishing a document is
called as normative, but if there is a conversion between the two, a transformation, we're fine,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, refresh your page and see if what I've recorded is at least good for the time being. 220K and 220L.
Yeah, Peter, I don't really care about this normative piece. I only care about what to use as a basis for discussion. And I think it might even be that the normative will be plain English and all the others are illustrative into a more or less formal, trustworthy extent. So, but my main point is the discussion.
All right. So shall we drop this all together then?
Well, I suggest using only clipboard discussion for the purpose of discussion draft. Decide on the normative definition later.
Here's the problem, Gus, is if you put that on record, then anybody who mentions Powell will be the last one.
Right.
I think we should just leave this book with the common understanding of the song that, you know, we can have any detail arguments for the song.
Okay, I think that's a wise thing to do.
The political mistake is to refer to Cliff here as normative. What Gunther was suggesting is to use Cliff as the reference specification, reference formal specification during our development process.
Yes.
Yes. Excellent.
I just realized I'm enthusiastically agreeing here to a process of what's being on the critical path.
Okay. Hang on one moment. Right, I just saved, so if people refresh, then that could go on record.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next item. What needs to be done to facilitate getting the desired results between now and sort of somewhere all these drafts coming out? Coordination. I'm listing out sort of we need some sort of coordination, adopting an open and transparent process, getting IPR issues out of the way, and then talking a little bit about the review and feedback process. A little one small thing I guess I tried to bring up during the last phone conference for Gunther, but Gunther probably already dropped off the call was... No?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, it was just my suggestion was sort of taking the IEEE way is to for people to maybe just agree that if these things, I mean, of course, the way IEEE do it is if you turn something into sort of the development of an IEEE spec, you will have to sign a letter saying if this goes into IEEE spec, your stuff sort of is it now belongs to IEEE. Of course, we're not doing IEEE, we are just trying to make this into an open standard. So similarly, if Gunther, since some your stuff is proprietary, if you can sign off something that says if this goes into public standard, then you agree that this will be this will take on an open license, is still yours. And if it doesn't, then your proprietary license stays. And for most open licenses, multiple licensing is possible anyway. So even if you say this is opened, you can still keep on licensing it on a in a proprietary manner to other people.
My worry, Peter, is
yes.
That we're getting a bit the cart a bit before the horse. We have two problems, and we have to be careful about those. And maybe I'm wrong about this, and Howard might be a better expert, but my concern is that it seems to me that if we choose to operate under the rules of some standards body, then obviously we have an open and transparent process as defined by that body, and we will end up dealing with the IPR rules as that body normally uses them. If we try to do it alone, then we actually have to have rules for how our process will be open and
please
what our IPR rules are.
Please do not go down that route, otherwise you won't actually find any space or time for doing any technical work.
Right.
This has been thrashed to death in multiple locations to the point where the UN, ISO, IEC have adopted pretty much common rules. There's even a new approach within OASIS where it's recognized that there's proprietary content, but those who have donated that content agree not to exert their rights over it, which is actually quite a neat way of doing it. That's a relatively new innovation in OASIS in the last 3 to 6 months.
Right, that doesn't change the ownership, it just doesn't assert the rights.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the trick. The IPR is still, the IP is still theirs. Right.
Kind of decommercialized, though.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what we're looking at is free access to this information. You ain't going to get charged a license fee for using it.
Right. And that's anyway the case in UCOM. So if it's really a subject we want to discuss here, but this whole point is to have it free and freely available. The only reason there is restrictions on there is that people can't just go and bastardize it, you know. That's all.
And reuse the name. That's
yeah, and things like that. So it's really meant to be to keep it available and but also keep the integrity of it. So that's really what it is. And if there's any adjustments that need to be made to the language or some other license or dual license, whatever, but those questions are probably for later. I mean, clearly the understanding is that the whole intention of UCOM is to have it open and available, and there's never been a fee or patent or any restriction of any kind against it.
I think it's one where we can all find our appropriate lawyers, lock them in a room, and thereby keep them off our backs.
Well, you still have to pay the bill for it.
That's the problem. I mean, the trouble is that the problem, Howard, is that it isn't a difficulty once you've adopted the rules of some organization, because then the lawyers have already done their bit. But if we try, as long as we're doing it sort of ad hoc, it's sort of working on gentleman's agreement, and if we have somebody in the law who isn't the gentleman, then we have a problem. And that has happened to other activities. Sorry?
I mean, I think it's worse than that, actually. Even if everybody's a gentleman, everybody's got perfect goodwill and wants everything to be open, there still could be problems. You know, they're just the witness. So, unfortunately, there's a reason we pay lawyers money and sort out the kind of wording clashes.
Well, the real practical problem here is the one of maintenance. So what if there is a change that needs to be made, or what if there is some addition that needs to be done? How is it going to be decided who is asserting the right to do that in a in an expedited manner, as expedited as necessary? So if you have to rebalance and ice the draft over a year in order to get one more unit into the draft, that'll be a problem.
That's not actually valid as a statement. There's enough flexibility in the ISO rules
exactly
to be able to work much faster than that. We can adopt an external specification in a 2-month ballot, job done.
As long as the external specification comes from a body that somebody recognizes as an SDL. I mean,
no, that JTC 1 restriction is not a restriction anywhere else. Come on, the rules get unnecessary rules get in the way, so we
right.
There are various ways.
There's also been other models for turning things into ISO standards by making a wrapper standard that references other content. That's, for example, how DICOM, which is an imaging standard has an ISO label, but it's not actually reproducing the content in ISO.
There are various mechanisms there. We shouldn't worry about that.
Right.
We just need to make sure that at point of use there is no license fee payable.
Right.
Well, we have a little acronym for it. PAPOC, publicly available free of charge.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, publicly available free of charge. Okay,
the problem, David, the problem, Peter, that I'm worried about is, I mean, NISC never has a problem because we do not assert copyright on anything that we contribute, ever. But certainly other organizations might have a reason to do that. In particular, for example, Top Quadrant leaps to mind. JPL itself has the same rules that we do, but Top Quadrant doesn't. If it builds this thing under government contract, that's one thing. If they do something in this area on their own as product, then, you know, that's their work, and they have a right to claim their intellectual property therein. And they have to decide, and their lawyers have to decide, how much of that chip is allowed to give us. Okay, and that's the kind of problem that we have run into. Well, I mean, in part, you have to realize it, you have to recognize that I have worked regrettably, or with, whether it's good or bad, with the object management group for 10 years. And the problem there is that everything, of course, is contributed by typically commercial organizations who are making product, or in fact, who promise to make product of the software standards that they contribute. And as a consequence, there is an elaborate control that is about protection. And some of these organizations, when they get into the development process, create rules of play for the development process in case people come in and go out, that they don't take out intellectual property they didn't contribute in it. So, okay.
Well said.
This is a very, very small area. It shouldn't be a problem. I can't imagine anybody trying to make money on a UOM ontology. So I don't think it's a problem, but I'm simply saying that this is why we get into all these issues.
And the answer really is to say, okay, there's a couple of ways of doing this out there. Let's just choose one and say we're going to adopt that process. Be it an ISO or an OASIS process, like the IPR rules.
Okay, if people would refresh their screen and look at 220M, 220M, and if that's good enough for this meeting, so what I said here is all we want to have is an understanding among those involved here that the resulting work is going to be publicly available free of charge. We can adopt the SDO process later.
I'm fine with that.
Oh.
Yeah, as required rather than later.
Right.
If we run into the problem, then let's fix it by using an existing mechanism. Because anybody who's going to be contributing to this is probably going to be familiar with one or more of the mechanisms anyway. But the key point is that the UOM ontology SDO is not going to invent its own practices.
No.
Right.
Okay, so any other comments on other issues other than IPR, like coordination, feedback, and so on? I assume we'll work on the mailing list, wiki, the new track site that Joel has put together, and those would be the platforms, and we keep the conversation sort of available to those who are already in the community. I don't think there's much to argue about it.
I was trying to understand what's been glossed over a couple of times. Can we understand a bit about what coordination mechanisms are?
This is Joel. Let me jump in here. I would expect that understanding what people are, what the champions are doing within their individual groups, if they have a document to publish, that they can save it inside their version directory and then commit it back to the repository so that everybody else can do an update and get a refreshed version of what they've been working on, and through the get a list of what's changed. So if there's some component of something that is a description or something, and that description needs some change, they can do an update. They can submit it back to the repository. Everybody can get a refresh copy and know what the changes are. What I wanted to do is to avoid things like SCP servers. And knowing who's going to be making what kinds of contributions and what kinds of changes to documents.
Can we just use the wiki? I mean, Peter has organized the wiki very nicely, and he could just have the document there, and all of that would be all of the wiki.
I would be fine with that. I found that the wiki processes, the wiki itself usually doesn't do really well with plain text documents or with things that are for publication, like Word documents.
Well, that's what I mean. That's not even used for it. Let's just put the content of the wiki and any edits will be just it will just be wiki. And if it's necessary to put a Word document in later, that can be done just by copy pasting and formatting.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, someone will have to, let's say, get that into Word documents or PDFs and so on, and I guess the wiki will start to falter in terms of providing diffs and version control and so on. I guess maybe we could agree on starting on the wiki, and then anything that is sort of publishable or becoming candidates for publication, then it starts getting submitted and version controlled in the subversion and track workspace. Would that be a good compromise?
I think you hit upon it, Peter. I think as long as we are strictly in discussion mode, it may be useful to use the wiki to capture some of the content as opposed to the chaff in the emails that we've got, so that we can get some of these issues ironed out and the decision made on the wiki. But once we have a draft document, the wiki is not going to be the maintenance form for the draft document.
Right.
If it is,
absolutely,
it's strictly going to be by FTP. That is, it'll be attached PDF or attached whatever. And the problem typically with a wiki is that it only understands attached PDF. It's not going to like attached Word documents or attached open office documents or whatever you want to do. And so
that's not been a problem. You can attach things there too. I'm just a bit hesitant. I use Track a lot for software development projects, but I can't see a real compelling added value. You check in a Word document on a subversion, but there's no diff you can do there because it's just a binary blob. So you might just as well, work out your content on the wiki site, and once you're ready to cast into the document, you can easily attach the document to the wiki, which has happened with all our slide presentations and all of that. So
I agree with that. I would just, I was looking at the other kinds of work that was being done in Cliff and Owl. And those definitely have, Word or some supporting document project, then that definitely has much more of a software development process in my head than it does just a document editing process.
I tend to agree with that,
The actual code, you mean?
Yeah, if you're going to be writing stuff in Cliff, then for me, I would expect to be able to take that and do something with it. Run it through a validator, run it through a verifier.
Right.
If there's some process that's going to be translating Owl into Cliff and vice versa, then I would expect to be able to use that.
Okay,
that,
so there would be
Owl file.
All right, so there would be a subversion space.
There is, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That is the point. I think that there is the engineered product here is software.
Right.
The document itself, you're right, we can mess around with how we get the document, but at some point, the documentation itself also starts to get into the problem of, having the right headings in the table of contents and, all the bits and pieces.
Right.
And at that point, I don't think of Word as a blob, or ODT for all that matter. I mean, either of those with their appropriate tooling does do change tracking if you turn it on in the document, and surely if I were editing, I would do that, because people do need to see what changes. Now, when you get to the stage where some changes are effectively masked, four pages.
Right. But
yeah.
You're right, absolutely, for the final draft to move from a draft to a final draft, yes. You're not moving around sections. Yeah.
Okay, one last space that we have not had much work done on, but I would also recommend, is to use the OOR sandbox, the Open Ontology Repository. Unfortunately, it only takes OWL and RDF for now, but eventually, I guess, give another 9, 12, 18 months, I mean, it'll be able to do CLIF as well. So any working stuff I would recommend also uploading to the OOR sandbox, because that allows, I mean, if we have multiple OWL ontologies, it allows like search to search and mapping across like multiple concepts and so on. So
wait, Peter, I don't quite understand. I mean, the suggestion to use the OOR sandbox at this moment, that means we can put OWL on.
Yes.
And obviously that applies to, you know, source work to some extent, like shift work and draft work.
Absolutely, yes.
But if we can't put the OOR document, and we can't put the CLIF document, I'm trying to understand how we're going to use it.
So, as I mentioned,
use that in addition to whatever we're going to put the CLIF document in the OOR document. That was the question.
Yes.
I understand that you have a reason to try to use your work. It makes sense, but the difficulty here is that I'm a little bit stuck on how we're going to coordinate that with a document in which, among other things, we just agreed that our base document as we're trying to get the ontology solidified is going to be the CLIF document. I mean, of course, we're going to have a lot more design discussions first, but we will probably have. But the question is, if our design discussions are, you know, largely in English with UML sketches, and then we have CLIF as the rendering, and then we're going to be looking at how the OWL and CLIF relate. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how to use the sandbox in that development.
My suggestion is to consider that on the side as sort of the as OWL people try to harmonize between, let's say, various OWL sources and so on, and it's not even a very strong recommendation or mandate as such.
Can the sandbox do OWL validity check? Can you do consistency checks, for example? My first question, can you do OWL validity check? Can you be sure that what we feed you is valid OWL at some point?
I can't even answer that offhand.
Because, I mean, the issue here is to have a toolkit that is identified that can do things like that, which is what Pat was talking about earlier. Is that clearly, if we wrote this thing in, you know, OWL 1 or OWL 1.1, I suppose, there are tools out there that we can use to first validate the OWL that say that it is correct OWL according to the specification. And secondly, we could even, presumably for the science ontology we're talking about, easily do consistency testing on the OWL. We would want a toolkit like that to be identified no matter how we use it. And then we have the problem of, if we start going to OWL 2, then you have a different notation. So you probably end up with a question of what tools actually accept OWL 2 and whether they can do further consistency and validity testing. I mean, this is just...
If I could request that we maybe defer the discussion about...
Yes, okay, I would totally...
So we'll just run them and see if they're useful or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to be limiting the expressiveness of our logic or whatever to what certain tools do. That's been a huge disaster for the OOR. So let's just not worry about it now.
Okay. I'll just leave that off as for people's consideration. And
Peter, you're breaking up. I barely understand you.
I'll just leave that as sort of for people's consideration try the OR sandbox for the hour work. Okay, let's move on.
Other people having trouble hearing Peter?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Try that, Peter.
If you refresh the page. And
refresh the page now.
Yeah, and go to 220N. So those
220N, is that?
Okay, let's move on. So between now and October 30th, what do we anticipate happening?
That's not what your notes say. You're talking about afterwards, right?
Afterwards. It's just a little. Okay, so we try to grasp those things feverishly, maybe weeks before the meeting. Someone has already published something or have candidates that could be discussed, and then we meet and we discuss that vigorously. And so what happens after that? After that day, what are we going to do? Would we be in a position to maybe do one more reiteration and then start applying to become to go into an SDO as a working group or something?
And then we have a base. Or else, if you believe you can't do that, then we need to do certain steps to understand the scope beforehand. Maybe it's my list of questions that you should be able to answer using this ontology. You know, something that is more than just an email thread of discussion.
I mean, if I could make a suggestion about scope, it seems to me that having debates about scope of our work would be kind of not very productive by itself, and that we should maybe have a rule that anyone who wants to include some topic in scope begin by sketching their approach to that topic rather than saying this should be in the scope. That might cut down some of our suggestions. I was expecting this year's suggestion, even though I came across a good snarky on some of the
No, I mean, what you're saying effectively is that when you open one of these boxes, you have to have something concrete inside it.
Right.
That, and we're not going to get into any more, you know, philosophical discussions if you've got some suggestion for what you want to add to the ontology in this area, this kind of thing, then make it clear.
Well, I don't know about we won't get into any philosophy, that's rather a type.
But I meant...
We won't get into plain disagreements about the scope thing. Let's have this, let's not have this.
I didn't feel like the issue was that people were asking to put things in scope that nobody else was, you know, bothering with, and then, you know, it would be up to them to make a shot at putting some content. I think the issue is more the other way. It's that we don't have a clear agreement on what sort of distinctions you should be able to make with this unit of measure ontology, and if kinds of quantities, and how detailed and specific those kinds of quantities should be in there, and whether those concepts of kind of quantities should be part of the understanding of the unit, or whether they should be separate, and these sorts of debates that we had for several weeks now. Those are scope debates still, but they're more that we need to somehow find a way of limiting or layering the scope and documenting how we do that.
Well, I'm
just worried about us firing off into a kind of meta discussion about the right way to and we'll just, you know, we're the more we go on making this, the higher we go. And we just get on with, like,
I think the point is that Gunther's point, though, is well taken. I think that if, in fact, we start with some straw man that is a summary of the email discussion to date with some identification of things that seem to be agreed to by the majority of the people who seem to know what they're doing and have an idea about how they were going to do that. So we have that down. And if there are clearly distinct points of view where there is clear flash of do we do X or do we do Y, then that's an issue which can be identified as an issue. This is the issue we need to resolve, and we can put that before the group in the face-to-face meeting. I mean, so that the end result of that is that we decide whether we're going to do this or that or some compromise between them. We can do that at that point and come to that agreement and put that one to rest, and we're not going to go back to it again. So that sort of, is that what you had to find out there? So there's, and there are issues about that are going to be the question of, if we do this, will we be able to satisfy these perceived uses for the ontology?
Right.
So.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm willing to take on the, because I had agreed to do it before. I need to summarize what's been done in the email and then run it around the body at least a week before the meeting, but preferably more than that, because people are going to be at Iswe and not have much time to look at the email, I should think, after that. So,
bear in mind that the web conference is before.
I'm sorry. I said Iswig, but yes, that's what I meant. Yes, the people will be at the conference, and that's the point. So they're not going to have much time to read this. So it's got to be like the end of this week, so that people can see it, or beginning of next, in any case. you know, that will, and the first try is to get that out there to make sure that there's nothing I've missed, nothing I've misstated, and so on in the summary. And then once we've got that out, we sort of have what Gunther described as a kind of base document for the meeting. And is that, that's what you had in mind, I take it, Gunther. Is that right?
Yes. Really, I apologize for making it sound like I want to make things more difficult. I really don't. I think there's a lot of stuff going over the email, and it really is time to summarize and bring it all back together again. Because the email discussion tends to just fizzle out, which is what happens.
Yeah, and they go off in a strange direction.
This is Steve. I mean, the way Peter was explaining to me, he was telling me this is supposed to be kind of a roll up your sleeves and produce work during that one day meeting on a Thursday. Rather than have more discussions about scope.
I understand that what I understood to be saying is that the only way we're going to get work done is if we have some kind of document on the table that tells us what the starting point is, and we can fix that document, or we can add some massive section to it, or we can appoint somebody to add this section to it or that section to it coming out of that meeting.
I'm agreeing with that. I'm just saying that that would be a document, if you like, editing session rather than another scope discussion session. That's what I'm urging.
So I would agree that we don't have an agenda item that says scope, I'm sure there will be questions we're going to run into where people say, oh, but if you do this, then I can't tell from looking at the unit whether I'm measuring, you know, length of height or wavelength and stuff like this. And then we'll have to bring up the scope discussion. Well, are we going to expect this from the standard to be able to do? And then we have to settle that point at some point.
Well, we can leave. I would suggest we have a parking lot easel on the side and note those things for ongoing discussion, but try and actually remain as concrete as possible during the meeting of the day so that we actually get some kind of work product out of it that builds upon what Ed's going to produce in the next couple of weeks.
It's kind of like when you try and discuss what is the scope of e-business, what you come down with are some key characteristics, perhaps clearly defined areas of uncertainty, if I could put it in those terms.
Yeah, I'm just worried that we're going to have a lot of, if we start getting into a discussion like that, we'll have a lot of people sitting around waiting for a few people to discuss something, whereas we could make much better use of people's time who are there.
Absolutely.
If we could, you know, actually roll up our sleeves and get some product out.
So you're thinking, it depends on how many people are there, but are you thinking in terms of some sort of working group, sub-working group arrangements after the first hour or two?
That's what I was thinking. Is that what others were thinking?
I think that would be great.
Yeah. The subject, maybe, but I'm not sure. How many people do we expect?
We are going to have two types of people, working people and observers. The working people are actually those who are deeply involved, like most of them are on this call now, plus maybe a few more. And the rest, let's aim at having them as just as observers and not sort of delaying the progress by expressing lots of opinion. So a lot of it, I mean, if we can get done and published and at least get out into the open a week or so before the face-to-face, that would definitely be nice. So I actually, if people could refresh the notes and look under 21UZ, the Zebra, 21UZ. That's sort of some of the notes, just some of the discussion that had been going on and some of the dates I'm proposing. So in essence, we go from philosophical discussion to standards drafting. Ed will summarize the overall position by the end of this week. Pat process, if anyone still wants to talk about scope, they have to be a lot more concrete. Gunter and Ed both agree that we should have a base document for the meeting available, and I'm putting the date October 19th. This is like roughly about 2 weeks, but if we say the Eastwick week, nobody works on the Eastwick week because they're mostly at Eastwick, then that means we have about a week, which then October 19th is only 2 weeks from now. And so my suggestion is we actually have a telecon again each Monday for the next 2 Mondays. And then I suggest also that Ed and Frank, since you two are co-chairs for the October 30th session, that you two come up with an agenda by next Monday. And then Ed and Steve sort of re-emphasized that we should avoid further scope discussion at that workshop and aim at getting a work product from the face-to-face.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Is Frank really going to begin participating? I mean, that's one of the questions. I understand he's busy, but...
It's very difficult to tell. I guess you'll have to find out, and if he is not as available as we hope he is, then hopefully you can pick up the slack. Would that be okay?
David Price is not coming to the meeting, is that right?
He's sort of
the other lead chairing sort of person is what I was thinking. So David isn't going to be there though.
David is going to be with us remotely. Would that be the case? I assume David Price and David Leo will both be attending remotely. Howard would be there in person. Is that correct, Howard?
Yeah, it's just because I happen to be in Washington on the Tuesday through Thursday and Cincinnati on Monday.
We're lucky. So, but presumably, I mean, if we regard remote attendees as attendees, then both Davids will actually be there. Not face-to-face, but they'll be there.
Yes. Well, my concern was who's going to run the meeting. I assume that Frank will be there, and we're going to need somebody. That's the issue. Somebody's going to have to chair the meeting and actually make sure that the meeting itself is facilitated. I mean, this is the one thing that, you know, for example, Gunther's concerns, is that, you know, you need a strong chair to stop certain discussions from running off. And I think that's going to be a critical issue. So it really is an issue of Peter, you will be there. So in the event that Frank is, for some reason, only limitedly available, you know, you could presumably chair the meeting in that case.
I would be fine with that, or Howard. Yeah, I mean, I probably would defer to someone.
Howard can control the meeting.
Yeah. Okay. So.
That compliment, I think.
Yes. Well, you've certainly managed a herd of cats on many occasions.
Okay. Maybe you can bring this up with Frank, and we will defer to you and Frank to give your recommendation. Yes. Would that be okay?
Yeah, I don't know how hard. I mean, would you feel uncomfortable then running the meeting?
Well, my principal constraint is that people are going to have to probably talk down to my level. That'd be a good thing.
Howard, that would be one of the most valuable things. Awesome.
Yeah.
If you're so required to express themselves clearly.
Yes, I can act real stupid if I want to.
Okay.
If Frank can't do it, I'll admit it.
Yeah, but Frank might enjoy.
Your management group, which is meeting next week, which is a set of heads of standards committees who have to harmonise their activities. Actually, I might mention this activity there because if it doesn't get that
Okay, Ed, you find out from Frank. Alright, I just captured the last sort of line of thinking into the notes. If you refresh, it's under the 21V4. So we're 10 minutes from an hour and a half. What do we anticipate happening after we have a clean set of deliverables? So I mean, we move to ISO through one of the TCs. We go straight to ISO. We go to OASIS first. Do we want to discuss this now? And if anyone has sort of one opinion over another and has a reason for that, this is the time.
I would propose to not discuss it now, because maybe we should move right to the next point, which might be more important for the time being.
Okay.
Because we can have discussions later when we have ideas.
Alright, I mean, the SEO thing is a simple thing. I mean, someone can come up with one statement, and if nobody disagrees, I mean, then we have a marching direction. If we open this to this heavy discussion, there's always enough opinion around, but we actually don't need a lot of those for this, because I mean, there's a lot of experience among those on the call already.
There's no point talking about a document until about a standardization until we have a draft.
All right. Okay, so we defer this. All right, next point. Possible funding.
Sorry, Howard, there is one advantage there. You know, if I do bring this up to the MOU management group, we'll have OASIS, JTC1, TC184 all advised that this work is going on, so at least they can think about who wants to step back fastest.
Yeah. I mean, well, eventually I think it's going to end up in ISO, but I don't think it necessarily has to be there next.
Well, it could be there next, but this is all the discussion.
Okay. Now we're going to the next one that we weren't going to discuss.
Yep. Right.
Okay, but are we going to discuss this on the 30th, or we don't even discuss this on...
Do that. That's fine. Or next week, whatever, but not now.
Okay. Okay, let's defer this to next week. Yeah, because Howard, can you wait until next week?
Yeah, unfortunately, next Monday I'm going to be chairing the MOU Management Group in Geneva, so I won't be able to be on the call, I suspect.
Right. But I mean, I definitely want Howard to bring this to the MOU meeting, if at all possible.
We can also discuss this in email, if it pleases you, but I mean, the only concern I have, which is following Chris, his Chute. Observation, sorry?
Chris Chute.
That the idea here is that in order to get maximum use out of this thing, you want it to be published somewhere on the web and not to subject it to ISO controls the moment it's born, so that we have to go through the PAS thing. I mean, it's a lot easier to go the other way. You put the thing on the web under some organization that publishes their specs on the web, and then you try to get it adopted by Fast Track and ISO.
Right.
And assuming we agree to that, the only question is whether it'll be OASIS or some other.
There is a problem with this, but as soon as we do this, we're going to be assigning URIs to things assigned in ISO standards. So somehow, as soon as it's published somewhere else, if URIs in their namespace,
That's an issue level we can borrow under the weeds later.
Yeah, great. Fair way.
Okay, so defer this to email during the next 5 days. Okay? Possible. And please use this thread. Please use the ongoing coordination thread.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, I'm mailing it, you mean, right?
Actually, just the framing, the list that involves just this smaller group.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. I think at least if there's some consensus here, we'll just bring that up as a recommendation. Yeah. All right, going to the next thing, funding. Up to now, everything is volunteer work, and it would be great if someone can take this effort and officially apply for funds, either for themselves individually or for the whole work group, which is even better. We just want to take inventory on what plans there are out there.
This is Steve. I was thinking, Ed, you know, I tried to make this fit gently within MEL, and I think it's not going too far because I think your new boss, Sweeney, thinks it has to be, you know, very manufacturing specific, even though he predisposed to like the idea of units of measure. I'm wondering whether you want to have maybe a discussion within this, possibly ITL or something, to see whether this might be interested in coming forth with a little funding on that. Seems to be inherently good in this stuff.
Inherently good isn't going to satisfy Sreeni, and I'm
not
sure that this is not something Sreeni wants to spend his money on. Now, the question is, with the whole new chain of the guard in ITL, I think the question is going to be whether I can find a person like Lisa in ITL who is in a position to have funding and consider doing it.
Yeah.
So I'll take that on to look at that, but a number of my channels have disappeared over there.
Yeah, take FEMA physics lab as well.
Okay, but you may be better connected there than I was. Bear in mind that I'm never my period of being advisor to upper NIST management is more than 20 years old.
I would suggest talk to Simon and see if you can work something through FEMA. I mean, they're doing these units well now anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you don't have to mount it. That by FEMA, if it is built. Okay.
So I'll capture.
I can look at that, but I'm not sure that there's more.
I'll capture into the note saying possibilities at NIST. Ed will explore with the help of Steve.
Simon Frechette is managing FEMA funding right now.
Okay, anyone else having any plans or already working on something or could suggest something that...
Well, it's the National Library of Medicine that might take an interest in it, and not I was doing sometimes things as well, right?
Yeah, so even funding... Even funding the people to work on this, I mean, like Rob, or maybe NASA funding the top quadrant folks, I mean, that's funning.
If it's NASA, we need somebody in NASA who is going to be pushing for the funding side. Chip is contract.
Right? Yeah, I can pass this here to contact Paul Feller and talk to him.
possibilities. Would that work?
I don't think he has any control of any funds.
No, not him, but he may have channels he can recommend. He's not a program manager type
I don't have
person.
Control.
No?
Anything more because he's using the same funding agencies that everybody in our field is doing, like NLM and some NIH and so forth, but they're very health oriented, and I'm not sure how much interest they have in the fundamental framework.
Yeah. And I guess also, Ed, when you talk to Frank, ask him what he thinks NSF can do.
Obviously, we can ask Frank about NSF, but again, that is proposal route that has regular periodic things, and that's how they do business. So.
Unfortunately, NSF tends to shy away from standards.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. So does DARPA, so does any other federal agency. I think the general perspective is that you should be an program.
Yeah, so NIST is actually the right group.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Does anybody from NIST here on the call know Barry Taylor?
Yeah.
So, I don't know whether... I mean, I know that he goes to the DPIM, right? He goes to the DPIM.
Well, Barry is officially retired.
Oh, he's retired.
So, in fact, I know the guy who officially goes to the IBM, and I will talk to him. I'm trying to remember his name again. I'm getting
That's
old.
Early, right?
Sorry?
That's early.
No, it's not Ehrlich. It's not Ehrlich. I mean, I think Ehrlich is the ISO entity. There's two bits, right? There's BIPM and there's ISO. Anyway, I know the guy. I've talked to him. He is basically Bob Drangafit's boss. And although Bob is in physics and he is in Mary One's unit, the international liaison. So, but in any case, the name will come to me in a minute. But nonetheless, I can talk to that guy. That's the point. I mean, if they have any money, I mean, that might be possible there. Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that.
And Chuck Ehrlich is interested. I did speak with Chuck about this a month ago, and he was interested. He just didn't know what to do with it.
You know, speaking for myself, the primary utility of a middle funding scheme is paper travel.
Yeah.
It's relatively small money for back here. Yeah, there are. If it's just travel, we can try a small conference grant from NLM. That might not be very hard to do.
Yeah, even that. Yeah.
You never come along.
So who's taking on NLM? Is that Mr. Zinn?
Yeah, I have a hard time with committing.
Yeah, no need to commit. Just go check them out. And
I can look further on the internet. I can report on that.
Yeah. Okay. We are more than an hour and a half. Any other business?
I have a 30-second appeal to Ed. Ed, we had it on Thursday. Report back on the Ontology Summit. And you're on the agenda for just giving us a quick update on this ULM activity. Do you think you can just throw a couple of slides together and get them to me in the next day or so?
Well, we should be. You want an improvement over what I did the last Thursday?
Slight improvement.
Last Thursday.
Yeah, slight improvement.
I'm not aware of any slides on this.
Yeah, there was. He already had a deck last Thursday, so maybe a little bit of update.
Yeah. They're on the thing from last Thursday's conference call. Was it last Thursday? Is that right?
Right. Yeah, last Thursday.
Well, not last Thursday, was it? It was a couple of Thursdays ago.
It could be two.
No, last Thursday. It's just past.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It was that ULM call, which I missed.
Okay. Right, right.
This is an update to a broader audience, basically. Just let everyone else know. You know, this was one of the nine projects identified in the April workshop, the summit. Just sort of saying, here's what's going on, here's our plan of action, and,
Yeah, I can do that.
Fantastic.
I'm thinking 5 minutes, you know.
I'm sure. I don't want to do that.
And Peter's already actually subbed out a template abstract. I'll send you the link to the wiki page.
Yes, I can do that for Thursday.
Right.
I don't know whether I'll be on. It depends on when, but, yeah.
It's a normal on the lock time, 1:30 to about 4. Okay, if nobody else is...
Well, we can deal with that offline. That's not, nobody else is worth it.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
All right. If nobody else has other things, burning things, then we meet again same time next Monday. Short call.
Without Howard.
Yeah, I may be able to get on the end of the call. Depends what time I get. I can get my hat and my cats to go to bed.
Okay, great. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you on email and then
thanks.
Next Monday.
Thank you.